On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between, this is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, happy off day. And get used to it, there's another one next week as well. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers hitting the reset button after the tough week in Philly. But again, I was talking to some friends today about that series who don't watch a lot of Brewers baseball. They're like, man, you guys were in all of those games. I mean, like, they were in it against Philly. I thought they had a chance. Like, thank you. That's what I was trying to say over this series. Yes, you can be mad you got swept. You were in all three games. And baseball fans recognize that, yes, all three games did not go your way. And there's no moral victories at the end of the day. But it's not like you got blown out. It's not like that Yankees series loss where you just really feel like just a pit in your stomach where you're really not happy about how things went. But the Brewers are still in first place. I've actually got the Cubs and the Reds up right now as they're starting a four-game series. This is a really big series for the Reds, quite frankly. Bigger for the Reds than it is for the Cubs. Well, for both teams, really. Reds are up 5-4 in the bottom of the seventh, so maybe that game could end by the time we're off the air here on WTMJ tonight. 5-4 Reds, bottom of the seventh inning. This might qualify as a retransmission of any form, you know, when you listen to the disclaimers and that sort of thing. But the Brewers, they get ready for the Tigers this week. And the Tigers are a team that has sort of been underperforming. I really thought the Tigers were going to be a lot better than they are. And we'll see old friend Mark Canna this week as well. And also a trade that we'll talk about a little bit later on in the program in Reese Olson getting the ball tomorrow, former Brewers prospect. But on tonight's show, we're going to talk stock. We're going down the list, the division, we're taking stock in the offense, we're taking stock in the pitching, and of course, the trade deadline. That's already started. I mean, it's amazing. Every year, as soon as June 1st hits, all anybody wants to talk about, who are you going to trade for? Who are you going to get? Who do they want? What are they going to do? It's pitching, guys. You know the answer to that. So we're going to talk about some of that coming up a little bit later on in the program. Just a reminder right now, before this game's gone final, the standings as they go, the Brewers are 36-26. I don't care about positioning, but the fact that they're 10 games above 500 with a plus 58 run differential, all good signs of a healthy, sustainable offense. Cubs are in second. They're at 31-31, but their run differential is minus 10. The Cardinals, they're 29-31. Their run differential is minus 45, but Wilson Contreras is on the way back soon. He's been playing catch. He's got another CT scan to resume baseball activities this week, so he could be back in the fold here soon for St. Louis. But the Brewers don't see the Cardinals again until well after the trade deadline. The Pirates are 29-32, and they're about to be 29-33. They're getting beat up by the Dodgers right now, 11-4. And then Cincinnati, as we just mentioned, taking on the Cubbies. It is 29-33 for their record. Here we are with 100 games to go. A little more than 100 games to go. It's kind of crazy how fast this season has flown by. It is 100 games to go. 62 games. 62 games in. And honestly, 10 games above 500, as we take stock in this episode, I don't know if there's anything to really worry about. I mean, I should rephrase that. There's a lot to worry about. But given the fact that the Brewers have maybe outplayed expectations, but yet It's the same Brewers we've seen all along. I said to a friend today, it kind of reminds me of 2018. The offense was so nasty. The pitching kind of a little bit in flux. Now, Chacin was great that season. Don't get me wrong. Brent Suter was starting for that team too. But the offense obviously carried them. MVP Christian Yelich, Ryan Braun, Aguilar. There were so many great offensive producers. And that's what the Brewers are this season. With 100 games to go. Obviously, we're going to talk about pitching a little bit later, but I like where they stand. I really do. I really do. The phone number is 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. If you want to join us here on the program, I'm going to get to you, caller, here in just a moment. I've got to take a break. I'll be right back to you here in just a moment, right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers Weekly goes till 9 o'clock tonight. This segment, we're going to be talking about the division and just taking stock at what's ahead for these teams. But first, we're going to get to the phone lines. A couple of callers, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Doug, you're back. You're on the program. Doug and Baraboo, you live on Brewers Extra Innings.
Yeah, good evening, Dom. Boy, you know, it's hard to say when you lose three games, you know, how can that be positive? But I saw so many positive things. And when you're playing one of the best teams in baseball at this time, they get seven runs in 3 days, and we were so close, and we didn't I know it was tough. We had four guys, you know, thrown out at home plate in those three games. But I had a question for you. This thing with Frelick, when he got called out for the third strike because of the 8-second rule, when he was in the batter's box, I understand the rule, but do you think the umpire actually caught that, or do you think he had some outside influence, like from the other manager, hey, watch for this guy? I had a hard time thinking that, oh, hey, the umpire just caught that. You're out. Strike three.
So here's a couple things. No, I don't think Rob Thompson was alerting the home plate umpire, as in Ryan Blakeney. What I saw from that, Sal was already in the box, mind you. He had already looked up at 11 seconds. And when he saw that Nola wasn't on the mound, he just reset and was just kind of waiting his turn. Never left the box, wasn't like rushing to get back in or anything like that. He thought that he was already locked in and engaged with the pitcher at the 11-second mark, which is his frustration, is that if I'm in here and I've already engaged and the pitcher's not engaged with me, why do I have to stay engaged? And Blakeney, what happens is you get a buzzer on your pack from somebody up top saying you're at 8 seconds, and if the batter's not looking, you can call a strike. I think he just totally butchered that, quite frankly. I think it was brutal. I think it was terrible. I think it's ruining the game. I think it's the worst thing about the pitch clock. I love the pitch clock. I think it's totally fine. But the fact that you can call out a guy for not being ready at 8 seconds, which he was, and then also hold up time. That might have been a catcher's interference. Let me wait 20 seconds. We've lost the plot. We've completely lost the plot. But it was one pitch. He was 1-2. I'm not going to sit here and say Sal was definitely going to strike out. You never know. That's why you play all the at-bats, right? But at the same time, it's like, come on. Like, have some feel. Like, Pat Murphy said that post-game as well. It's like, hey, let's roll with the flow of the game here. Let's try to, you know, come on. Like, it wasn't, Nola was surprised too. It wasn't like he was trying to bait him or anything like that. But appreciate the call there, Doug. And then when it comes to this series, I mean, I still see them as contenders. The Phillies are good. Like, it's not like they got swept by a team that, and they weren't competitive in any of the games or something like that. I think there's plenty to hang on to there and be okay with that. You'll see him again at your place and see how that goes. Get to Mike up in Fond du Lac. Mike, you're live here on Brewers Extra Innings.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Great.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the managers and the pitching. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of throw it. Greg Counsell is like dead to me, and that's okay because that's the way it should be. But when we look back over the last couple of years, and my point is that I haven't been able to really get interested because it seemed like every time that they were going to get somewhere, I think he overpitched guys. And I know he was watching pitch counts and all that other stuff, but situationally, he was overpitching people, leaving them in too long, and then kind of screwing us for the next game. And, you know, I don't feel that this year with Murphy. And I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
With the pitching, I think a lot of that has to do with personnel, though, as well. I think you got to remember Council had, you know, I assume you're meaning the starting pitching, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you got to remember Council had a Cy Young Award winner. He had a healthy Freddie in 21 for the most part. Woodruff. He had guys that could eat innings. And he needed length out of those guys because until like that 7-8-9 role really materialized with Boxberger and Williams and Hader in 21, like it was still a little bit thin in the back of the pen. And then what made Council great in the earlier days as a manager is really flexing and moving the 40-man roster before the three-batter minimum and bringing up and down relievers when you didn't have a limit on options. Like that's what allowed Council to do that. So you had to make the adjustment. I don't think Council overused arms, personally. I think quite frankly, making the lanes and kind of standardizing, you have the seventh, you have the eighth, you have the ninth, was a good thing. But at the same time, I think when you look at this team, right, Mike, this team kind of, they need to come ahead of the game when they do, because, you know, some of these guys don't have the repertoires to go a third time. People like Freddie has the stuff to go a third time through. Sometimes he's not able to because he's at 100 pitches in the fifth inning because he's trying to strike everybody out. Or you're careful with a guy like Colin Ray or Bryce Wilson because you're using an opener and to try to avoid them facing that third time through, right? So I see it. I think they're a yin and a yang. There are a few things that I didn't like about Counts, and there's a few things I didn't like about Murphy with the way they use their bullpens, but that's baseball, and that's why I have a job, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, well, appreciate the call there, Mike. Thanks for calling in. But, yeah, I think and also the fan perspective, too, I love that, where he was just really honest about, oh, Counsel's dead to me. Like, that's fine. Do your thing, man. You do you. It's all good. Let's talk a little bit about the division. Okay, I just gave you the standings a moment ago with 100 games to go. Checking in on the Reds and the Cubbies. They're in a commercial right now, but the Reds blew it open. Oh, my gosh. The Reds blew it open. What happened? I'm catching up. This is live, brilliant radio. Bases loaded walk by Jonathan India and a two-run single by Will Benson. Shout out to the Reds. All right. Reds are up 8-4, top of the eighth inning. Sam Moll is on the pitch now for the Red Legs. So that's good news. So let's go ahead and, you know, maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, given the chaos in the Crosstown series. Let's go ahead and put the Cubs at 31-32 and the Reds at 30-33. The Reds still scare me. I said it all offseason. The Reds still scare me. And let's say they get the win today, they'll move to 6.5 games back. The Brewers see the Reds this weekend at American Family Field, which will be a very important series, given the fact that the Reds are starting to click. Like, Ellie just broke out of a really big funk. Noelvi Marte is coming back in about 3 weeks' time. They're getting healthier. TJ Friedl is back. They did just have to option Graham Ashcraft to make room for Emilio Pagan to return to the team into their bullpen. They're a really interesting team. They got four-man bench. That is a couple of catchers. It's a weird offense because a lot of the offense plays every day. But I'm still very scared of the Reds. I think Frankie Montas is a star. Hunter Green, man, when he puts it together, he looks unhittable. And Andrew Abbott, we saw what he did against the Brewers back in April. So I still see potential for the Reds. And the other main reason why I see a lot of potential for the Reds, they're the only other team with a positive run differential. Like, showing signs like, hey, this is not who we are, as in being four games under 500 coming into play tonight, being plus 11 in the run differential. And also, do not sleep on the rest of this division. They're starting to wake up out of, especially the Cardinals. And I said it, like, that series, the Brewers were just catching them at a right time. I was ready to maybe read a eulogy, man. They were looking bad. But then that Mother's Day game clicked them into gear. And something in that Mother's Day game when the Brewers had the chance to, you know, kind of chop the head off the snake, if you will, didn't get a chance to do it, and the Cardinals have taken it and ran with it. And they're doing all this without Tommy Edman. Now Lars Nootbaar is on the IL with an oblique. Wilson Contreras has still been out for the majority of this. So it's impressive to see what they're doing, and it's a lot to do with Sonny Gray, who's on the mound tonight against the St. Louis Cardinals. But the rest of the division, the way I take stock with the rest of the division, keep an eye on the Reds, because here's their upcoming series, okay? They've got four games with the Cubs, and they can generate some momentum at home this weekend against the Cubs. Then they get a quick two-gamer with their Ohio rivals, with the Cleveland Guardians, who, oh, by the way, are in first place in the AL Central. Then they come here next weekend. They go to Pittsburgh, back home for Boston, home for Pittsburgh, and then to St. Louis. That's for the rest of the month. This is quietly a really important stretch for the Reds. Because if they can make it through this 5-6 games above 500, get themselves back above 500, and would likely move them into second or third place in the division. And then this is about the time. This is literally the one-year anniversary of Ellie De La Cruz being called up. This is about the time when they started to go on their run last year. Do not sleep on the Reds. And also do not sleep on the Pirates. What Paul Skeens did to Shohei Ohtani yesterday, I know Ohtani got him after. Man, Skeens and Jones, they are taking a leap this year. They have been really impressive to watch. And they still, I know we make fun of Chapman, and Gary hit a home run off of Chapman, and Bednar's had a weird year. Holderman has sneaky been incredible this season. They've got a really good bullpen. I fear the Reds more than I fear the Pirates if I'm looking at the bottom two teams. I might even fear the Reds more than I fear the Cubs. Truly. Because the Cubs bullpen, as you saw against the White Sox this past week, is not good. And their starting rotation, solid as it may be, you got to figure that some regression is coming for Javier Assad. Shota got beat up again the other day. He wasn't going to stay in 0.84 all year, but their bullpen is... they only trust two guys, Leiter and Neris, and Wisniewski to an extent. But it's just like... Craig Council without a bullpen is, it's really tough to win games. 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. So that's the taking stock of the division. Let's talk about the Brewers' offense. I know it wasn't pretty this week. I got a pick that's clicking and a pick that's not so clicking, but we'll break that down coming up next. Brewers Weekly continues after this on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Don Petronio. Text here from Tom in Pewaukee. Hey, Carlos F. Rodriguez is back on everyone's radar. Any insight to his early season struggles and what clicked into gear into May? It's no secret the Brewers excel at finding 4-5-inning and dive guys. Do you think this plays in the playoffs? Nobody feels too comfortable a third time through the order. Let me answer the back half of that first there, Tom. The third time through the lineup never really happens in the playoffs unless you're an elite pitcher like your name is Max Scherzer. But what we're learning now is exposing your relievers too much to certain teams. Like, look at the Phillies to the Diamondbacks last year. The Phillies exposed Jose Alvarado. And by the end of that series, they were not fooled by Alvarado, and they added insurance against Alvarado in that Game 7. And there is something to say, yeah, hey, you shouldn't let a starter go a third time through, but hey, you probably also shouldn't let a reliever that isn't your closer face a guy for a third time in the same series. You know, when you get months or weeks in between appearances against relievers and those stack up, it's like, oh wow, this guy's 1-for-12 in his career against this reliever. He must own him. But all of a sudden, you get to see him three times in the span of six calendar days, and it gets a little tougher, right? So there's a balance there, right? I think the Brewers understand what they have with this current pitching staff. Maybe, I mean, quite frankly, the only guys that I'd consider right now a third time through are Freddie and Colin Ray. And then you can feel it out with Bryce Wilson, maybe batter to batter, but that's just kind of how it goes. As for Carlos Rodriguez, he's the youngest, one of the youngest pitchers in the league. I mean, I think there's always some sort of early season getting into your funk. I have not watched a lot of tape on Carlos this year. Reminder, Carlos Rodriguez is somebody in the Brewers organization, is one of their top pitching prospects. He's closer than Jacob Mizorowski is. Of course, Mizorowski is also not on the 40-man roster. Rodriguez is somebody that would need to be added to the 40-man roster to be brought up from AAA. What I see with Rodriguez, again, he's 22 years old, one of the youngest pitchers in AAA. He had a great month in May. If the Brewers are calling him up, something has gone wrong with their roster depth, because I'll get into the pitching stuff in the next segment. There's reinforcements on the way. But talking offense here, I do this every now and then where we look at the league averages. And just a reminder to like set your watch, if you will, of just think about it. It's not 1982 and everybody's hitting off of concrete AstroTurf where you hit a ground ball and it's an automatic single, right? That's not happening anymore. There's a lot fewer 300 hitters, a lot fewer 280 hitters. League average. Here is a league average slash line, okay? A 240 batting average, a 310 on base percentage, a 388 slugging percentage. This isn't going to become a controversy about the dead end baseballs, but 388 is league average for slugging. Yikes. That makes the OPS league average under 700, 698. It is hard to hit in modern baseball. So where do the Brewers stack up? Well, 258 batting average. That is fifth best in all of baseball, and 18 points better than league average. 330 on base percentage, that is third best in Major League Baseball, 20 points better than league average. Their slugging is still over 400 at 408, 20 points better. That is sixth best in baseball. Thus, their OPS is 738 and 40 points better. Math, 40 points better. That is fourth in Major League Baseball. Like we said, 2018 vibes, the offense carrying things, figure it out on the starting staff. I am flagging, I'm not concerned, but we're noticing this stock, you know, is just kind of going a little bit down. It's like, oh, it's a little downturn. I'm going to hold. I'm not going to release. I'm not going to sell William Contreras. I know we've talked about the day off and that he went into Pat Murphy's office and like, yeah, I should play. Me and Willie are in the lineup. And I mean, he nearly had a home run. That ball was robbed by Dominic Fletcher, and maybe it would have been a different story here. But the numbers are starting to show fatigue, and this is exactly what everyone's concerned about. No one doubts. Like, if it was up to the player, every player would play 162 games, but it's not up to the player. And especially for a catcher, and for a catcher who's had a lot on his plate this year, learning a new staff pretty much every other night. Tobias Myers and Ashby coming back in his new repertoire and Robert Gasser's debut and meeting Joe Ross throughout spring training and Jonas and having him through spring training, then him not being available, Jansen John. I mean, like, the list goes on of how hard he's had to work this year on top of being an elite hitter. And since that epic home run against Justin Verlander, remember the 14-pitch battle with Verlander when he hit the home run? Since that game, he's lost 31 points on his batting average. Excuse me, 37 points on his batting average and 91 points on his OPS. He's hitting about 215 over these last 20 or so games. He's not striking out alarmingly high, but he's hitting a few more ground balls than usual. He's hitting to a few more double plays. He had done a really good job in April avoiding that. And to me, that says, hey, man, it's okay. Take a breather. But I think at this point, him and Willie have their sights set on setting a Brewers record for most games started to start a season by a pair of teammates, which is 63, so they could break that record on Saturday. But we're just monitoring that with William. He is due. It's time. He needs a day off. So if you can win these first two games of the series, granted you're facing a lefty on Sunday with Tarik Skubal, probably going to start that game. But maybe he gets a day off here coming up this next week, or maybe even on Saturday as well. As for somebody trending up, and that's how we'll end this segment, we've got to talk more about Joey Ortiz. This dude's playing himself into being an all-star. Since getting everyday reps, that was at the end of the Kansas City series and when they came back home for St. Louis. So he's had 100 plate appearances as pretty much the everyday third baseman, okay? Here's his line. He's got a 306 batting average over those last 100 plate appearances with a 900 OPS. Really darn good. 8 doubles. 3 homers, so that's 11 extra base hits. He's got 11 walks and only 10 strikeouts. He's got more extra base hits than strikeouts over his last 100 plate appearances. He's had 2 days off since May 9th. Now, quite frankly, I'm not taking him out of the lineup anytime soon. He's been phenomenal. He has continued to come into his own. There will probably level off here a little bit because you're not going to hit 300 all season long, but man, serious rookie of the year consideration. I don't think he's going to win it because the rules say that Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Shota Imanaga are all eligible, even though they were professional players in Japan, but I digress. He's certainly a look. You look at Jared Jones has been incredible. Obviously, Paul Skeens is going to get a look. Joey Ortiz might be leading the crop of position player rookies in the National League. And like true rookies. Man, what a find. What a great, great find for Joey Ortiz and for the Brewers. Let's talk a little pitching, though. This is where the stock is like, lots to monitor. But we do have some injury updates in this segment as well. Stay with us. 855-616-1620. On your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All that positivity about the pitching. About the offense, anyway. We got to get some positive vibes here for the pitching staff as we're taking stock in this episode of Brewers Weekly. I'm Dominic Catronio. Now this segment is all about the pitching staff, and let's just start with the injury updates. Joe Ross, He's going to throw a bullpen this weekend. He's dealing with a back strain. Remember, he was pulled after one inning in Miami a couple of weeks ago. He's going to throw a bullpen this weekend. They expect one rehab start after that, maybe two, and then he's back in the rotation. So, in theory, if the bullpen goes well, he could be with Nashville early next week, and then maybe even back with the Brewers by the end of the homestand or even when they go out west to take on the Angels and the Padres. So his return is soon. Just got to make sure he gets through that bullpen okay this weekend. D.L. Hall, still waiting on that second opinion. Now, here's the whole saga of what happened. The Brewers, remember, D.L. Hall was in his rehab assignment from the sprained MCL that he had from the game against St. Louis back in late April. And he was in his rehab assignment, his second outing, felt like the velo was back, everything good. And on his last pitch of the day, his cleat on his delivery home snagged in the dirt, caused it to twist, falls, lands funky. Doesn't fall to the ground, I'm saying, but like the foot hits the ground and he twists it, feels awkward, and he knew something's wrong. Like, oh no, I just got back from this. Like, did I just do it again? The imaging came back clean, but he was still experiencing some discomfort, so they sent it to a second opinion, and it took forever for that second opinion to be seen. And that second opinion doctor, Dr. Neil Elitrosh, wanted him to come in person. So that is what he is doing this week, along with Robert Gasser. Robert Gasser was officially diagnosed with a strained flexor tendon in his left arm. That's not good. That's really not good. Rest is the priority. I mean, this is months. It could be. Rest, and then build it back up, make sure everything's okay. But they're also awaiting a second opinion on his elbow. There may be something else in there. Flexor strains, forearm soreness, tightness. That region always makes me hold my breath. And he's also seen Dr. Neil Elitrosh out in L.A. So that's not good. How about some better news? Jacob Junis. He threw 21 pitches in two innings earlier this week in AAA. Maybe one more here soon this weekend, and maybe he's in the rotation next week during the homestand. Could be part of the reason why the Brewers are TBD for the weekend is deciding what they want to do this time through the order. Do they want Freddie to go tomorrow on his normal fifth-day start, or do they have Tobias come in tomorrow, give Freddie an extra day, and then hand it to Bryce Wilson on Sunday, giving him an extra day as well? Then maybe it's because you know Jacob Junis could be back against the Blue Jays. That's all to be determined. J.B. Bukauskas, he went to Arizona. He should be in AAA soon to face live hitters coming back from his triceps, lat, soreness, everything that went on in his arm. He is certainly a very valuable bullpen piece for the Brewers, so he's coming back soon. And then how about one more update? Devin Williams. Devin's playing catch. In fact, the other day, he had his little training tool, the Clean Fuego, if you've never seen him use this before. Clean Fuego just makes sure that you're on top of the baseball or however grip you want to do it. It's basically a disc, a puck, if you will, of a baseball. It has the laces and everything. But picture you're throwing a hockey puck. And any wobble on it shows that you're not quite where you want to be. Like, so he does it to train his arm for his changeup, make sure everything's in sync. And he was already playing catch with that. Devin told me in his own words, "I think I'm ahead of schedule, but the Brewers want to take it slow," which, understood, it's your all-star closer. The Brewers have been saying, like, after the all-star break, I think Devin's pushing himself to be before the all-star break. That's me guessing, not Devin. But I don't know if the Brewers will let him do so. But he's playing catch, he's getting extended out, he's only been off flat ground so far. But the reason why all this is so important, the Brewers are still 10th in team ERA, despite all of this happening, right? They're still 10th. 3.75 for their team ERA. It's not what it was the last couple of years, but hey, it's a different personnel. But they've thrown the most relief innings in baseball. Their relievers have thrown 259 innings, which is only 31 innings fewer than their starters. Think of it this way. We're at 62 games, right? Starters generally throw five or so innings, and I know there's been a few openers lately, so these numbers get a little bit skewed because of, I think it's now four games that have been started by an opener for the Brewers. So technically, while Bryce Wilson and Colin Ray are bulk men, they are still technically relievers. And also it impacts your starting numbers as well. But when you think about it, 31 innings difference, I mean, that's essentially three games, a little more than three games of innings. And that's a really tight, I mean, man, it's just a lot to wear on a team. So if you get Devin Williams back, and furthermore, Jacob Junis is probably going to be a little bit of a hybrid type arm where he's not going to be truly an opener, but he's not truly going to be a starter. Maybe one and a half times through an order and then hand it over to somebody else. That's what I anticipate with Jacob Junis, given they want to make sure his shoulder can make it through the end of the year. His slider is disgusting, and it could also make it easier. What you could do, right, when Junis comes in, let's say Junis starts the game, gets all these lefties, carves them up with his slider, and then he bring in Brian Hudson for two innings behind him. And all these lefties are like, now what? And then after that, you bring in like Nolly Paredes. How great has he been, by the way? Man, the Brewers just keep doing it. Nolly Paredes has been awesome. But just picture yourself, I mean, or even look ahead. When Devin returns, you can have McGill in the eighth. You can have Pyomps, or you can have Paredes, or you can have Hudson in the seventh. You have options all of a sudden in those leverage roles if the starter doesn't get past the seventh inning. You're getting closer. The pitching staff should improve. But let's talk about pitchers. Let's talk about the trade deadline. Who's available? Who are the Brewers going to be calling? That's next on WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
You may have heard of the big names that's going to be available on the trade block, right? I've talked about them. Jesus Luzardo, Garrett Crochet. Who are some of the under-the-radar guys that the Brewers should be looking at? Jeff Passan wrote a good piece here on ESPN Plus. Just overall, not just specific to the Brewers, just overall what each team's going to be looking at and what their roles are going to be in the trade deadline dance. July 30th. It's a weird day this year because of day games on the 31st, so they don't want guys being held out of the lineup just in case they're getting traded and everything. So it's all night games on the 30th. That way you can make trades, set your lineup, and then move on from there. A couple of names that jumped out to me here in Passan's article that really, really caught my eye. Number one off the bat, Luis Severino. Now, the Mets are being the Mets. Let's put it like that. The Mets are not good. And they might trade Pete Alonso. They might trade some other pieces. Obviously, David Stearns is over there. Severino would be a rental. And he's been okay this season. I mean, he's had some good and bad. The Brewers beat him on opening weekend, but that's opening weekend. There's only so much stake you can do into it. I wonder if Severino, getting back into the heat of the playoffs like he was back when he was a Yankee. Remember, this dude was top 10 in Cy Young back-to-back years in 17 and 18 before he got injured. This season, he's made 12 starts, 72 innings. He's got 27 walks, which I don't love. 58 strikeouts. He's not the same strikeout guy. He struck out over 200 in both of those years. But his FIP's on par with his ERA, 3.7. His ERA is 3.25, so it's a little bit of a disparity there, showing some good luck. But look, the Brewers just kind of need innings as currency. It's Severino as a rental, a low-risk rental. It would be about $2-3 million for the rest of the year. That's someone that jumped out to me. Somebody like Cal Quantrill out in the Rockies. Plus, he's got an extra year of control on top of that, too. That could be useful. Tyler Anderson with the Angels. Now, he's got already a year guaranteed, $13 million guaranteed for next year. That's something to be considered. And again, another guy with extra year of control. And then this one's from me. This one just popped up into my head before the show today. With the Astros news that both Jose Urquidy and Christian Javier are done for the year, two main starter arms for them. They don't think Luis Garcia will be a huge impact this year. I mean, he's going to pitch this year, but he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. And Justin Verlander's got a vesting option that's going to probably trigger once he reaches, I believe it's 140 innings, so he might be gone too. I wonder, would the Astros entertain trading Framber Valdez? He's got an extra year of control as well. Left-handed, can eat innings, ground ball specialist, and using this defense behind him. Now, I'm not saying the Astros defense is bad. It's good. Brewers defense is pretty darn good, too. Framber, this could be a good fit for him, too. Now, again, I don't know if the Astros are even going to trade him, but you just kind of read the tea leaves here. Garcia could be back at some point. McCullers, they're still hoping he could come back, but they've been saying that, it feels like, for four straight years with McCullers. But I really am intrigued on the plus one rents. Like, I would like Severino. I think that's a great under-the-radar pick. and it hopefully wouldn't cost as much in prospect capital. But when you look at who's available, who are you going to be giving up? I mean, you're talking maybe some position players. I'm not giving up Tyler Black. I might give up Mike Bovey, but I mean, he's still so young in his career. You know, do you think about Carlos Rodriguez? Do you think about Brock Wilkin? The Brewers have a lot of like middle of the minors talent right now, like high A, double A. That's where a lot of their stuff when it comes to the prospect capital that they can give up. So I don't know. I see the chance for the Brewers to make a move, but quite frankly, they're far from the only ones in the market. All right, going to take my last break and just give you the upcoming schedule before we say goodnight here on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, I got like 40 seconds. Reds won, by the way. So that went final. Alexis Diaz just obliterated the side. Here is your schedule, Brewers and Tigers. As no starters have been announced for the Brewers yet, but here's what you got. Tomorrow, 5:05 airtime, 5:40 first pitch. They're all Central Time. It'll be up against Reese Olson, former Brewers prospect for Daniel Norris trade. Saturday, I'm on the air at 2 with Brewers warm-up. First pitch is at 3:10. And then on Sunday, a 12:05 airtime for a 12:40 first pitch. My thanks to Matt Yazel, our producer. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.